I never told no one that. My whole life I've been holding back. Every time I load my gun up so I can shoot for the stars, I hear a voice like, who do you think you are?
All right, everybody. Another day, another dollar, another one of my favorite episodes of my favorite podcast. Yes, I'm biased. It's my own podcast. And I gotta say, I'm super stoked. I'm super happy. I'm with Tabitha Scott. She's recognized thought leader, innovator, public speaker, and a 2023 Forbes Business Council contributor. She specializes in harnessing human dynamics for sustainable business success and is a best-selling author. Currently, she advises on engagement, innovation, and leadership for major organizations. Tabitha has spearheaded IT strategy during a record expansion phase for a Fortune 400 firm and has held roles as CEO of Colescott Group, congratulations, military assistance company, as well as SVP of Innovation and Sustainability at Balfour Beatty Investments and Lendlease Americas. That's a mouthful right there. Leading significant business shifts.
Really tired now.
Yeah. Energy science to boost organizational innovation and productivity. Tabitha was instrumental in forming the world's largest solar-powered community, earning White House recognition for her tech advancements. Congratulations on that.
Thanks, man.
You know, I didn't read the full part. So did you go to the White House and everything?
Dude, I got to go twice. Yeah.
President Joe or President Don?
It was Obama once and Bush two the other time. So I served on different committees. Yeah, for each of those administrations.
Completely two different styles of leadership too. Congratulations on that.
Thanks. But you know what? It's often misunderstood that it was a Republican that did the first environmental legislation, and GW in Texas put in more wind energy than the rest of the United States combined back in those days. So it's not just talked about very much.
Well, I mean, if you think about it too, I mean, we can say Elon Musk is more Republican. Believe it or not, it's within a person.
Yeah.
A platform is just placating if I'm a Democrat or I'm a Republican. If you look at the numbers, both parties are pretty much ran by the same organizations, the same groups of people donate.
That's right. So,
you know, it's all.
And you know what I think? I think that things dealing with nature and the environment have not gone nearly as fast as they could because they've been derailed by polarity versus focusing on the things that bring us all together, right? Which are, you know, being able to handle change, safety, making a good living, making a profitable business. Like, these are things everybody wants. And I really think everyone wants a healthy nature and environment and air too. So it's just, let's stop with all the politics, you know, making politics part of it.
That's the only way you get fundraising. That's also the only way you get people to go out and vote. If you think about it, if people had that same passion towards personal development, towards business development, as they do either watching CNN or if they're watching Fox News or NPR or TikTok or however they get their information from,
right,
they'd be so way ahead of themselves.
You know what? 40% of Americans are getting their news off of social media now. And social media is solely tailored, thanks to our friend at AI, you know, to whatever you like. So you're not even getting any objective views. You know, there was always propaganda throughout all of history, right? But now it's to such an extent. And since half of our population is getting our news now that way, it's no surprise, you know, how things are turning out.
So propaganda is just a nice way of saying manipulation, right?
Yeah, right on.
And here, I know you help out organizations and you help out leadership, but isn't that wild that people don't understand a company is similar to a country? It's run by, there's a board, the president, the CEO.
Yeah.
You know, we can fire a president just just like we can fire a CEO.
And that's right.
What I love best about your book is it's transformational in the sense that I literally left corporate America because so many companies needed to read your book. Now, I'm going to plug it right now. I'm going to say what book it is, because I want, if there's a, and Tabitha, you're going to laugh. To me, there's a difference between a boss and a leader. Yeah. I actually wrote a book. A boss is the person that goes, he orders all those posters, teamwork, leadership. Doesn't implement it, but it looks great, right? It looks great.
Flower medals in the background, yes. And yes. Mountains and streams.
HR gives you like a book bigger than War and Peace on what you cannot do. The whole company is it's like this attitude of, that's not my job. That's right. Not. They are completely tuned out. Toxic leadership, all the way, the boss, because he's not a toxic boss, goes all the way down. A leader doesn't have to have, you know, leadership. He doesn't have to have teamwork. The row. I love that one. It's always a picture of rowers. Leadership's the one with the eagle flying through the valley. And Tabitha's book, The Current Insight Series, Powering Change, The Hidden Resource to Unleash Potential, Productivity, and Profits. So, and I got the honor of having a digital copy. So it blew my mind, because isn't this how we should really run businesses, organizations?
Well, I think it is. I think it is. I think that all the answers are around us in nature. And if you want to get really fast and adaptable and complex and innovative, then you need to look at nature and all of the examples in it. And we, as Americans especially, have this notion of, oh, let's save the poor planet. And I'm saying turn that shit on its head, because the planet's been evolving for 4 billion years. Modern business, about 350. And so if you want to look at like neural networks that will blow away our most advanced AI, look at mycelium networks, like I write about in the book. There's no waste in nature, right? Everything is perfectly in balance and efficient. And why are we feeling so off balance as a workforce today? Because we've gotten so far away from the natural order of things. Our businesses don't appreciate that there's a very predictable growth cycle they're all going to go through, because it's the law of science. Right? Like, you can't skip from one stage to the other without going through all cycles and then hopping onto the new curve. And so you pick the wrong leader at the wrong time, like Southwest did last year during the, you know, Christmas season. That's what happened with their fiasco. They picked a person that, you know, was streamlining and refining when they need a revolutionary that would add technology, you know, back into the company. So all of our answers that we need for business today, every modern crisis can be solved through nature.
Now, speaking of Southwest, don't you think sometimes when the founder, the CEO is larger than life, when there's, it's Gary Keller, right? Isn't his name?
Well, Gary Kelly was the second one that came on to refine and streamline. And he was brought in at the right time, because you're right, they were heading up that big growth curve. And he's the one that streamlined them into specialized buckets to be able to grow fast and scale. But then he brought in somebody just like him to replace him, instead of a revolutionary, you know, that would pop them onto the next curve.
But that's what usually happens, is we don't understand that you have to evolve. If you don't evolve, you become Kodak, which,
that's right.
At one time, you know, Fortune 500, one of the top stocks in the Dow, Kodak can't go anywhere but up. Now, yes, seasoned people like our age know what Kodak was, but if you ask my two teenage daughters, hey, you know, what do you guys think about Kodak as a company?
Or Blockbuster or Compaq, you know?
Compaq was the computer.
Yeah, dude, it was.
In fact, right there during that time, Apple was like on the verge of complete collapse.
Yeah.
It, you know, people have short-term memories, but okay, as a kid, I remember, oh my God, gosh, Apple, woo. It was like so expensive for starters.
Yeah.
Because it was like the edgy, cool, you know, single parent. My mom got me one and it was like,
oh, wow. Yeah. I had a Tandy 1000.
But don't worry. I can talk about that I've had a computer, but my skills when it comes to tech is I just literally mastered the word processor.
Sweet. There you go.
So but okay. There's CEOs. We'll put Gary Keller. We'll put Steve Jobs. We'll put Howard Schultz. Can we put Bob Iger? I don't know. I mean, as of yesterday, he looks like he came back to save the company, just like Howard Schultz.
Yeah, and if you look at like Steve Jobs, they didn't like the dude, but they knew that he was the fresh air that they needed. They needed somebody that's at the beginning of the growth curve to come in that thinks into the future versus somebody to refine, you know, they were whittling away. And so they brought him in at the right time and then they got him out of the way at the right time, you know, to bring on the next leader to scale them up the next curve.
Now, I'm an arts and science guy. I've got 2 degrees in journalism. I don't have an MBA. I might have dabbled in a couple classes in business. This is something that you say in your book that's like completely out there, that business is like a breathing entity, like an organic organism.
It's an organism. Absolutely. Yeah.
Which is like, you know, the little business classes that I did take at LSU. I think you would have given an aneurysm to one of all my professors saying that. Explain that to us.
Yeah, it's an organism because let's break this down. First, organizations are made of people, right? And all people, all living things, everything with DNA in it is made of energy. The same energy, by the way, which is why at our core, we all react to the laws of science, equal and opposite reaction. You ever had a new idea you're trying to get through and you know, the first thing you expect is, I don't have budget. I don't have resources. I can't. It's our natural equal and opposite reaction versus getting behind something that somebody wants to do or they're energized by. Now you're adding momentum. And so taking these laws of science and motion and movement and complexity and just applying it to humans is the first step. Well, businesses go through those same growth curves, you know, over and over again. If you look at every business model, you know, the new wave model, whether it's back when total quality management came in, or then you have like design thinking today, right? They're all useful in one part of that curve and not useful in the other parts. And so it's all about recognizing that growth cycle for your business and for the people in it, because the people at the bottom of the curve love risk. They think into the future. They're entrepreneurs like you. The people at the top, they hate risk and they try to find it and kill it. So they're great for auditing and accounting and, you know, streamlining things. But you get the wrong person in the wrong spot, or you get the wrong leader, you know, when a business is at the wrong cycle, or you don't recognize like Blockbuster, you got to adapt onto the next curve, then you fall off and you die. So if you want a living business, you got to keep jumping onto the next cycle.
So literally though, it can be like brain surgery. Because if you think about it, a company like Blockbuster could have saved itself if it would have taken Reed Hastings, founder, ex-CEO of Netflix, if they would have taken the offer. I forgot what the offer was that they laughed.
You're absolutely right. I can't remember what it was either, but they had an offer on the table. They turned it down and then just miserably failed. But they didn't recognize what part of the growth cycle they were in. You know, you're in decline. You need innovation. You need to either exit the market or, you know, reinvent yourself. But and they didn't either.
But a company like Blockbuster, it was like hitting the Titanic. It didn't just sink right off the bat. It was a slow process.
And companies can stay in that maturity phase, which in the old days we would call a cash cow. They could stay in that for years and years. You know, look at Nabisco, look at Tractor Supply Company. Look at these large companies who are mature in what they do, and they haven't done anything totally disruptive yet, but they can milk it out for a very long time. But as soon as you start that decline phase, you better get innovative really quick.
Well, sometimes it's too late, because I was one of the last members of Blockbuster. I was a late adopter to Netflix.
Do you still have your purple card?
I actually had my original, my laminated one. I was one of those old souls. Get off my lawn. I want to be able to visually see the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I need to see the box. I need to walk the store. So I was the late adopter, but it was funny because then Blockbuster was trying to do the mailers as well as have their brick and mortar. They're like, oh, well, for an extra, I think it was like $19.99, two or three movies, and then you just send them back to us and we'll send you whatever's on your queue. And it's like, well, isn't that what Netflix is doing?
I think I've heard this before, oddly.
So there is a time, though, it's too late. A company cannot be saved. Like Blockbuster, there was once it took on all that water, all that losses, once it saw Netflix just be, instead of being the hunter or the, you know, they became the hunted because they became the top dog. It was just,
that's right. But you know what? The time, you have a lot of entrepreneurial listeners, and the time you need to start thinking about reinvention is the time that things are going great. Once you start growing really fast and it's going great, now you're halfway up that curve, and you better start thinking about, what do I do after this cycle is over? Because it is not going to last forever. That's the one thing that we do know. It can't last forever. You can extend it for years and years, but eventually it's going to come back down. And so always be thinking about the next thing. And what happens in companies, you get the innovator in, the big idea starts up the ramps, and they start getting in silos and streamlining. And so your innovative people disappear because it's no longer fun. You know, they're handcuffed and too much compliance, no freedom, no creativity. So companies have to find a way to box that off and have a Skunk Works or an innovation lab or some way to keep those innovative people around and keep them, you know, moving forward.
Well, everybody needs to reinvest. Not only do we have to reinvest ourselves in leadership books or training, personal development, business development. I don't know whether, I think it's Hasbro. It might be Mattel. One of the two stuck, never innovated, just doing the same toy year in and year out. And then for years, it was one bad quarter, then two bad quarters, and they don't see a pattern. And then it's like 2 years, 3 years of declining sales.
Yeah.
So, and what's crazy is, now that's a toxic leader, because shouldn't there be some writing on the way? Hey, we're doing the same thing over and over.
Time to make a movie.
Exactly.
Somebody said that, and now they're doing a bit better, I would wager.
So, Tabitha, you're an innovator. I get it. You're way forward in your thinking, and you're thinking of being, we need to have leaders instead of bosses. Did you, when you came across starting out, what was your experience? Were you working for a lot of toxic companies, or were you just like the unicorn that just worked everywhere you worked until you became CEO? It was just like your ideal setting.
Well, I wouldn't say it's ideal. I've had a lot of interesting experiences along the way. One of which was, I don't think you could get away with this today, but early on, I was actually told by the president of a company I was working with and his chairman of the board that you were much more qualified than the dude we're going to hire for this role of investments advisor. But I just have to tell you, nobody's going to give money to a young female. So we gave it to somebody else. And I was so young and so naive. I was like, well, thank you for telling me I did so well, you know? So I've had several of those happen along the way. But I tell you what, early in my career, I worked for a privately held electronic payments company before PayPal. And it was like a dream come true, because if you could set the vision, they were cavalier enough to say, all right, go get it. And we ended up getting the first electronic payments program for Department of Defense they privatized military housing. So we got the rent payments program for that. And that then got me into doing innovation and sustainability for some of my clients, which were big builders, building companies. And that got into renewable energy assets. And it was doing the things that I loved to do. So I had that blend of young entrepreneurial company into large global, you know, huge mega companies, and, you know, back and forth again, you know, over time. So it's been a blend of both. And I'm grateful for all the lessons that I've learned from each.
Now, I love the book, but I gotta say, usually toxic leadership, stuck leadership, stuffy, set in their ways, they don't believe in growth. They're not gonna. This book is like an aha book. That could you imagine if every amazing boss, not leader, just bosses, all these people read how quickly? I mean,
we try to make it really simple.
Yeah, but that shift, people don't understand that in a dying environment or one filled with cancer, toxicity, the revolving door is caused by the ineffective leadership, the toxic leader. But in their mind, they sell themselves the story. It's hard to hire. It's hard to hire great people.
Yeah, yeah. It's not that hard. And even I call it like the AAA framework. You assess people. What are they great at? What are they energized by? So you want to get the right butt in the right seat, align that to what you need for each project. Technology is changing too fast today to think that it's going to be one size fits all. You know, it's just not feasible anymore. And then adapt. You have to constantly adapt as things are changing. And even if you have a crappy boss for your leader, if you understand that about yourself, like, I know I love innovation, what's new. So I might take a job if it's short term, I have to go in there and streamline and find risks and follow up, you know, constant rules. But it better be short term, because I know that's not going to be a fit long term. So I would avoid that. And then align yourself to do more of the stuff you love to do. I mean, because we're made of energy, think about our language, right? In business. That company's transformed. She lit up a room. I feel drained. I feel energized, you know? And what is the thing that comes up over your head whenever you have a good idea? It's a light bulb, right? Mm. So everything comes back to energy. If you figure out what energizes you, try to do more of it, even gamify your workday with it. If you have to do crappy reports you hate, then say, I'm going to do it for 2 hours and then I'm going to go walk my dog or whatever, you know, eat some chocolate. But the more you can do things that energize you throughout your day, you can manage up with those crappy bosses and avoid burnout, you know?
Yeah. I agree with you 100%. I came out of retirement and started working for going back into corporate America. And I got to say, your book, I mean, it's something you and I are on board completely, but it's like people, there's two types of people, those that believe in personal development and those that say it doesn't work, but they're the ones that really need it.
Yeah. Isn't that funny how that happens?
Exactly. and I get it, because I mean, some of the companies that I've worked for, And you would think they have everything in place. They've got the meditation, mandatory meditation at the beginning of the week and at the end of the week. You're like, oh wow, this looks good. This is thriving. And okay, that's on the, you know, that's very surface level. But you have to be great. It's like saying you're completely healthy because you go to the gym, but you're sneaking out and eating Big Macs and eating In-N-Out Burger or whatever fast food people love to eat. And it's like, well, deep down inside, you're not healthy. And it's the same thing with the company. Yeah. And I know as a leader, when you were CEO, it's a win-win mentality. Because the number one thing is when people leave, the number one expense is you have to train. Training's expensive when you have to train new people. You have to train them in the systems and in the process. And then you also have to get them on board to your culture, whatever mm-hmm. culture you have. Because every organization has a culture, just like what you said. Yeah. Every living being has its culture, has mm-hmm. its own personality.
And if you can't connect with them, you know, if we're all made of energy and people are feeling so off balance, especially after COVID and so burnout, it's because there's no connection. You can't turn on a light if it's not connected to power, right? So if you're not connecting with the people you work with or that work for you or your boss, like you can't direct things forward. And then the more exact and precise you can be about this is what I expect, or, you know, the more you can direct things, you get that Venturi effect back to nature and the laws of physics. You know, it'll go faster if you're clear about your directions, if you're a good leader about what you expect, and then you can accelerate things from there with purpose. Purpose is like throwing fuel on a flame. People will do more. They're happier. They're more engaged. They're more innovative. They're more productive. They're more profitable when they have purpose with what they do.
It's all about purpose, but it's all about being in service. Mm-hmm. Because if we believe that we're doing the right thing, we yeah. believe we're solving issues, we're solving problems for the customer, for the client, for the prospect that hopefully will become, that you'll be completely bought in.
Yeah.
You're absolutely. You won't have burnout because you'll have that same passion because right. you're like, let's roll. Do you think sometimes burnout is just like that feeling, a dread that somewhere in your soul, you're like, man, why am I here? This isn't where I'm supposed to be. We're not doing anything productive here. Yeah, we're making the board money. We're making the CEO money. We're making mm-hmm. someone else, the founder, money. But we're not really doing anything positive.
Yeah, absolutely. Burnout comes from being in a role that's opposite of what you are naturally energized by. So it might be you love working with people and you are isolated in your job. It might be that you're forced to work with people and you prefer to be behind the scenes, you know, and not work with them so much. It could be risk versus risk averse, you know, risk taker versus risk aversion. It could be that you're a generalist, like a general physician, or maybe you're a specialist and you're being forced into a generalist role. But if you're put in a role that's opposite of where you are, and the more opposite it is, the faster you're going to burn out. I mean, it's that straightforward, and purpose is what energizes you. So 100%, I agree with you. It all comes back to purpose, and people are naturally energized in different ways. So if you don't know what that is, you're not aligning, you're not adapting, you know, you're not getting the most out of people.
Now, you and I, we've seen the modern workplace or evolve, I guess, within, well, I'm 50, so almost 30 years. Do you really see much of a change for the good or the bad in the way companies manage or train management?
It's all across the board, because I think you have this younger generation with this movement of I refuse to be part of the problem or the system. And they have a lot more realization of what's going on and a desire to have purpose-driven work. So I do think there are some things that are being raised as awareness and improving. There's a lot of things around sustainability and economic inclusion and socioeconomic, you know, inclusion that are emerging and becoming, you know, more positive. I also feel like as long as we have the system we have of where we're doing short-term returns at expense of all else, then we're going to struggle. We're going to struggle. And we're also going to struggle when you have the very top of the company making 100 or 1,000 times more than the boots on the ground that are making your company profitable. You know, you're paying minimum wage to your retailers in the store, and then your very top leaders are, you know, ridiculously wealthy. And I'm not saying they shouldn't be able to earn a lot of money, but I think what causes this friction and tension is that, you know, we're going to just do things short and fast and simple and cut things, you know, for the majority, the 90%, in favor of, you know, the 10% getting to look good to the stock market for one more, you know, report.
So what Tabitha is saying, Bob, is you're making a whole lot of money for Disney and your pay is incredible, but majority of people that work for the House of Mouse are struggling.
The House of Mouse is struggling.
And they get a lot of free labor, which their college, you know, for college credit, you can learn how to sweep at Disney World, and you can learn how to do the rides, and you can work for free.
You know what? There are so many scary statistics now. I think it's like the age of 51 is now the average age of home ownership for the first time. If that doesn't say something, when I was growing up, you could have one of the spouses working at the grocery store, and that was enough to buy a house. Like, people cannot afford to buy houses anymore. They can't afford to build generational wealth. And it's really shifted out of proportion. So not to say that some people haven't earned more than others or things like that. It's a societal shift. There's like 60% of seniors that can't afford housing. What are we going to do with that? Because there's more baby boomers today and more people age 65 than there has been in the history of the United States. And so what are we going to do about these things? You know?
So then what you're saying is all of us that are poo-pooing the millennials and the Gen Zs on the, well, we can't afford housing and it's not like what it was. They're being honest.
They are being honest. There's some great documentaries out there about that.
Growing up in my neighborhood, most of the moms, I mean, my mom was single parent. It was weird being from a divorced parent growing up in the late 70s, early 80s. But most of my friends, their mom were stay-at-home moms. That's like speaking a foreign language now.
Yeah. So
there's no way unless you're married to Mark Zuckerberg or you're... Or you're married to somebody making millions. It's it's true. But the one thing when it comes to leadership though that I've noticed is old leadership is trying to hold on.
Yeah.
With your might. Sure. Because when you said these millennials and these Gen Zs have had enough and they want purpose driven work. That's where you hear all the old guys saying they're lazy, they're soft, they're this, they're that. And really, it's because these kids have seen people, us, their moms, their grandparents, their dad, being treated like crap.
Yeah.
I mean, my mom would still drink the Kool-Aid and wanted me to work my whole life in corporate America, but there was one time she just worked for AT&T, Ma Bell, Southern Bell, whatever they want to call themselves. And she was getting too old and making too much money. And just one day, thankfully, it was after I graduated. And they're like, hey, thank you. So nice to know you. When kids see that,
yeah,
how can we say, suck it up? It's loyalty. We want you here for 30, 40. And it's like, no.
Yeah. You don't. You want to make as much as possible and, you know, fill out your tickets about surveys. And it's interesting. I talk about survey bias in the book as well, because you have to assess, you know what's really going on before you can align and then adapt. And there are so many different types of survey bias, the observer effect, you know, and I go through all the different types that companies just don't even think about that. As they're, you know, they're like, oh, well, we got best place to work again, but you sent out a bunch of emails saying we're going after this and we really hope you'll, you know, answer it in a positive way, because this is good for all of us, you know.
Well, here's the statute of limitations. I worked for Edward Jones Investments for years before I became an entrepreneur. I was a financial advisor, and it was rated for like 3 years in a row, Fortune magazine, mm-hmm. number one company to work for. Wow. Now, on the surface, you're like, man, I got to work there. It's
amazing. I want to go there.
Yeah. And if you asked all of us, it was like horrible. It was just like they kept on telling us to vote.
Yeah.
It was 100% participation. If everybody's saying this is like the cure for cancer, mm-hmm. you know, it's like we're trying to bamboozle new people. Yeah, you're here now. It's like Survivor. And you're like, this is the number one company to work for. Holy smokes, I'd hate to see number 100.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And you wonder how those things happen. But if you think about how people are, you know, kind of coerced, or they feel like their jobs are in jeopardy, what is the truth? You know, and I spend a whole section talking about like truth and trust, the 2 5-letter T words. Well, we just don't have them anymore.
Yeah.
Truth and trust.
Those are two things that are out the door. If not only our society doesn't have it, how can we expect it to be in the workplace?
Yeah. Yeah. I break down the things. The book is written in a way that the first part is the accelerating pace of change. You know, like the whole year 2000, the pace of technological change is now replicated every 30 seconds. And, you know, on our phone, our personal devices, we carry more technology and computing power than the spaceship that first went up, you know, the first year NASA landed on the moon. And it's just, our brains can't keep up with that. And so this accelerating pace of change and disconnection, distraction, you know, talking about the stats there and our attention span and what it's doing to us, that's what causes this off balance feeling and disconnection. And that's what leads to burnout. And then the middle part of the book talks about the natural systems like diversity, like neural networks, you know, like the laws of physics that can put us back in touch, that can put all of those things connected again. And then the third section has real business case studies, double-blind live studies with billion-dollar organizations that took place all over the world. And so this is 15 years of research showing, just think back. You know, we talk about doing like net zero buildings today. And I'm like, would it be been building for tens of thousands of years? They didn't have air conditioning and electricity. This is not new. This is old. Remember what it was like to be living in harmony with nature, and you're going to figure all of this crap out.
Well, I mean, all you have to do is go to the eternal city of Rome or Pompeii, mm-hmm. or even if you want to go look at indigenous stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like people, sometimes we think we're so evolved, but have we really? When they were way more in touch with nature.
Yes.
Less problems. You said it best. We have a phone. And what are we using with it? If someone had told me in high school, when I was sleeping through high school, that one day I can do a term paper on this little thing.
Yeah.
I can research. I can ask someone out on a date. I can... No need for an encyclopedia. No need to know about the Dewey Decimal System. I can
get letters in my little email box. You know,
I can do everything with it. It would be mind blowing. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So is it like the Jetsons? Are we flying cars? Do we find a cure for cancer? Is everybody as smart as Einstein? Like, no, people usually in general just watch videos of women. They're
on TikTok.
They're on TikTok. They go on social media. They go on this platform that they can use as a tool, but instead they pretend they're politicians and they want to tell people their views, their social views, their political views, and their religious views. Oh, wow. Congratulations. I mean, we're all, you know, in a tab. Do I use my phone as a tool? Yeah. I read your notes. I read your book. I read your book on the phone, on my desktop, my laptop. But there's YouTube. There's so much. When I look at your book, it's like these are forward-thinking books. These are the type of books that pushes people towards becoming who they're always meant to be. My podcast is based on your book.
Taking Risk.
Taking Risk.
Yeah.
Going out there, not being stuck. You know, it's like everybody doesn't understand if you want change, you have to create change.
That's right. You got to jump on the next growth curve. You got to reinvent yourself.
Every company can do that, whether it's a mom and pop or whether, you know, a Fortune 500 company, publicly traded corporation. But yet a lot of times we all want that change and we all want those results without changing, which is impossible.
Well, we have no limits in reality to how many times we can reinvent ourselves. There's absolutely no limit. The only way that we control things is to control ourselves, our own reaction to them. And there is no limit to that. And once people really get their heads wrapped around that, you can continue to reinvent yourself. It doesn't matter if you're 90 years old. Reinvent yourself.
Hey, you know? Cher keeps on reinventing herself.
Yeah, she rocks.
The thing I love about reinventing yourself, it's always been there for us. I mean, we love the stories. We love Charles Dickens. We love the Christmas story, the Christmas tale. You know, Ebenezer Scrooge, horrible boss. Everybody hates him.
Yep.
He learns a lesson from four people, if you count his dead partner. And he wakes up transformed. He wakes up as the leader instead of the boss that everybody wants. And is it that easy? Yeah. All it really takes is a decision, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And changing your behavior. It's so interesting. I love Malcolm Gladwell's work. And
me too.
I love his podcast too. And it's so simple. It's like, it's relevant and it's actionable. Just give them one damn thing to do at a time. And that's it. Otherwise people get frozen in action. And what do bad leaders do? Here's the new policy and 10 things to start doing. Well, that overwhelms people. You know, what's in it for me? How's that relate to me? And just give me one thing at a time. And if you do that, you can see this huge organizational shift. And we give examples where companies did that. And if you stop thinking of top down, I mean, what in nature grows from top down?
Exactly.
Nothing.
Well, imagine, how can there be growth if leadership has, to quote the Rolling Stones, under my thumb?
Yeah.
You can't grow. You can't spread your wings. You can't lead. You can't grow and become the potential. Everybody will be checked out. Everybody. Yeah. That's where I said, hey, that's not my department.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right off the bat, anywhere that you go with customer service, hey, can you solve this issue for me? If they're like, yeah, let me go do that. That's a company that everybody's bought into it.
Yeah. You know, Branson, who has the Virgin companies and many other companies.
Everything Virgin.
Everything. Yes. How he hires people. I used to know one of his HR folks that worked pretty close to the top of that organization. And she said, they'll go find like a barista at a coffee shop. And if they're a really great person that resonates with personalities, they can train them up all day long to be a hotel, you know, person that greets people there. So it's not about a specialty of education. You can educate people, but it's finding those people, yeah, that are energized by what you need. You need people that resonate with other people. So, you know, observe that trait and then you can train them up in whatever you want to train them up in.
I've only read his books and I've only seen interviews. I've never seen him in person, but just by reading his material, who would not want to work for one of his companies?
Right. Let's go. Let's.
Everybody's bought into it.
Let's do it.
But that's why, I mean, I know. Just let's be like, most of his businesses, yes, some like Virgin Records, and he even acknowledges not everything's a success.
Yeah.
But in general, there's a fighting chance. In general, his airline was amazing. I'm sure it's not now because they just took Alaskan Air instead of letting it be Virgin Air and letting it grow and letting it be an outlier.
Yeah.
They just bought it for the routes and the planes and whatnot. And that's that.
It lost its nuance.
Yes. Yeah. But we need to be more like that. I mean, think about it. Who doesn't want to work for a guy like that? But who doesn't also want to emulate a guy like that when it comes to marketing?
Yeah. You know,
market your business, market yourself. We all have something to sell. I mean, here we are on a Friday. Your agent had to sell me and I had to sell you on doing it on a different day. But we're all there. And that's why, you know, when I originally saw the book, I'm like, okay, just another one. But when I literally read it, and yes, people buy it on Amazon. I'm not always shilling like that, but it did. Because, you know, I've worked for the checked out people. Mm-hmm. I've worked for the toxic environments. I've been a leader. At times I've been a horrible boss or a great leader. And it's because of books like this, though, because you're either growing and evolving. There's no static. You're static. You can't just stand still, because if you stand still, you're going to die. You're going to be the codex. You're going to be the blocker.
You're going to be part of a living organism.
Exactly. Exactly.
Until you're not, and it dies and goes bankrupt, you know?
Well, it's some statistic that all the high flyers will eventually die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're the list besides Kodak. If we looked at the Dow stocks from 1950 or in the Fortune 500, a lot of companies,
over 80% have failed. Yeah.
Because when you said it best, nothing lasts forever. Even societies, Rome had a 1,000-year run, but it had to collapse.
Yeah. And what are those signs of maturity in our society? And, you know, how are we going to reinvent those? And how are we going to choose the right leaders, you know, of our economy to do that? Those are the tough questions to chew on, you know?
Oh, those are the tough questions. But what we don't realize too is with all this division and all this, it's my way or the highway.
Mm-hmm.
The only way to grow is teamwork.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have another degree in history. You know, from 13 colonies to 13 states. Eventually, if we don't change our ways, eventually, if it's not it's not just all of us, one day we will be like Rome. Hopefully, I won't be around, but you know.
Me too. You're right. And that's what is a better system starts with what's not working today and how can we adapt, you know?
It's all about adapting and understanding.
It's all about adapting.
understanding other people's world. When you said it best, diversity. Diversity is a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
I had a boss. You know how you had your story about you're a woman? I had a boss tell me that I didn't have a face for TV and that because I was Hispanic, which, you know, now it's like, holy smokes, do you want your company to get sued? But
yeah,
like, wow, man, thanks for your honesty. But that's your opinion, which
I get it. Yeah. And it's interesting. Diversity of all types is important. You know, our backgrounds, our socioeconomics, our education, our ethnicity, and also our cognitive, you know, the ways we think, which is what we were talking about earlier. You know, some people prefer being around people. Some people prefer complexity, others specialization, but getting the diversity of cognitive thinking and technologies. And I talk about that in the book. You can map technologies on the growth curve. If you want future forward, that's your AI, you know, generative AI. If you want something in the middle, like executing, that's data management. And if you want to go up to risk mitigation and reducing errors, that's automation. And so giving the people the right tools in the right place, everything goes back to growth cycles, everything. Nature's a badass.
Yeah. Yeah. I thank you for your time. Thank you for your book too.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Thanks for reading it and for having me on your show today.
Powering Change, The Hidden Resource to Unleash Potential, Productivity, and Profits. I know how to find it. I know where to buy it. But now is your chance to tell us, how do we buy it? I know you wrote a second book, which I'm going to order on Amazon, because that actually, when I read that, I'm like, whoa, it follows similar to this. Where do we buy that? Where do we buy both books? How do we find you and all the other good stuff?
Yeah. So your favorite bookseller online, I'm going to be there. So head over to TabithaAScott.com and there's a tab for books and it will show you my upcoming book signing tour, what cities I'll be in. And it also has this book, Powering Change, as well as Trust Your Animal Instincts, which is all about burnout and a true story of my life.
So you had burnout?
I walked away from an executive global career at the end of 2016, gave away my stuff, went and lived in the jungle for 3 months, and yes, wrote a book about what I learned so that nobody else does that.
You know, that should be like a Netflix movie, just based on
that. Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah, that's very interesting.
It was interesting. I grew up on a small farm, and so we had all of these, you know, farm animals. It was not a production farm, just more like pet horses, you know, and chickens and ducks and things. So I've always resonated with nature, and this book is literally about getting the answers to life's, at the time, crises, you know, divorce after 21 years, empty nesting, walking away from my job, corporate burnout, you know, all the things that were happening. And now, you know, I realized through a series of messages, like I would see snakes for a long time and then realized, oh, shed your skin. You know, you're being held back. You're allowing yourself to be held back. And so the book talks about a series of animals, both in the US and in Costa Rica in the jungle that I encountered. And you can't make that stuff up. It's pretty amazing.
Well, here's a question I have to ask, Tabitha. What do you have to tell the person that's in the audience or whatnot that he owns a company, he's a boss, set in his ways, it's always been my way or the highway, why fix something that's broken? What words do you have to tell them when it comes to maybe it's time to make that shift?
Yeah, I go back to, since we brought up trust your animal instincts, I'm going to use the bat as an example. And bats have to literally risk dropping to their death in order to fly. The way that they're designed, they can't take off from the ground like other birds. And until you take some risk, until you try to fix what's broken, until you trust yourself that whatever failure you might have is still better than where you're sitting today, then that can change your life. That can change your life. So let go. It's not an action of always moving forward and pushing and making it happen. Sometimes it's just letting the heck go of what is holding you back and allowing life to come to you. Allow the opportunities to come to you.
Talk about having faith. Talk about being courageous and talk about being vulnerable to do all that. But I love it. Hey, success, it's all about being and surpassing that comfort zone. Tabitha, right. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Omar.
Thank you for the book. Thank you for the opportunity. And hey, just what an amazing topic. What an amazing person. Even though it says in your bio that you're an innovator, in my book, you're an Uber innovator.
Thank you so much. We'll come on out here to Boulder, Colorado sometime, and we'll do a live broadcast sometime.
Oh, for sure. I'm always in Colorado. It's when I retire, that steamboat.
Oh, yeah. I have a friend there. It is beautiful. Well, come on out, and we shall talk again.
Thank you. Definitely. What if you took action and made it happen and started living inside of your purpose? What if you deep were? Right now you can make the choice to never listen to that negative voice no more. The hardest prison to escape is our own mind. I was trapped inside that prison for a long time. To make it happen, you gotta take action. Just imagine what if it did work.